This is a Pinball News production.
So my name is Bruce Westfall. We've been in business in Columbus, Ohio since the mid-80s. Bottom line is, about 15 years ago, my buddy called me up one day, already in the graphics business and living my life and not knowing really anything about pinball or arcade. He goes, "Hey, there's an arcade auction every once in a while at the Ohio State Fairgrounds. You should go down with me." Well, wow. So a lot of things happened very quickly after that, and I started collecting games, started restoring games. I was just another one of these guys bringing these things back to life and really enjoying every minute of it. Slowly, I started thinking, man, I wonder if anybody's reproducing any of this stuff, especially the art. I'm in the art world. I'm a commercial screen printer. I'm a commercial digital printing company. We do a lot in the litho industry. So I started digging around online and found out that, sure as heck, somebody does do it. And the first company I found, or the first person I found, was Shay Assad, does a lot with the Gottlieb reproductions. And he says, "You know what? I'm looking for another reproducer." So I said, "You don't do it yourself? You're not in the printing?" No. I have these things manufactured. So I said, "I'd love to get involved." So one thing led to another. Then I met Rob. I met Rick Bartlett. I met Ron Webb, and kept going and started learning. There's a handful of other companies doing what I do, CPR being one of them. So I just wanted to get involved and help keep these things alive. And now we've done well over 100 projects. We probably have 10 to 20 projects in-house at all times. And boy, have we learned a lot about reproducing parts versus manufacturing the first run of the parts, especially some of these that are 20, 30, 40 years old. They weren't really thinking about collectors when they manufactured this stuff that many years ago. And the inks they used are gone. A lot of the screen mesh type they used is gone. So that being said, I have somebody with me who's very special today. He's a graphics professional. He is an absolute expert. He's my partner in Outside Edge, which is our sort of a consumer little project we work on to bring the artwork to the collecting world for decoration, for fun. That's kind of what we do the Outside Edge project for. So that being said, I'm going to hand the mic over to Scott because he's got one heck of a presentation, and I'll interject throughout the whole thing. Thank you.
All right, Bruce. So, hold on. There we go. So hopefully we can make this fun. I hope this is the best presentation you see all day, even though there's not as many of you. So here we go. Printing can be complicated. It's pink.
What color would you say this is? It's pink, right? How about Little Pony here? I'm pink.
I'm looking for more than pink. I'm looking for luscious.
Luscious?
Luscious.
So you mean... What exactly do you mean?
Okay, I've said this before. You guys aren't hearing me. Luscious is more than a color. It's a state of mind. Like when you're on a Caribbean cruise and you've had at least 3 Mai Tais and you're flirting with the towel boy. He looks like a cross between Javier Bardem and Brad Pitt. And you're having a perfect hair day. That's luscious. I'm just not feeling luscious. Have you ever eaten at the Ichigan Yuru restaurant in the Shinjuku neighborhood of Tokyo? They've got a seared ahi tuna that is to die for. Make it look like that. It's like the inside of a baby polar bear's ear. It's like goosebumps on a Thursday. It's a nuclear accident, but there's no problem with it. It's like King Kong French kissed you. Stop it, Kong. I want it to be so delish that you could just reach in there and bite it and eat it all up.
Yep. It's a brochure for a colostomy bag. Hey, guys! We're gonna need to send someone out for a bottle of Luscious. Great. We added Luscious. Lots and lots of Luscious.
That's it! Oh, my gosh!
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're a good boy.
It was pink.
All right, so that's something that we in the printing industry deal with all the time. It's trying to hit colors that everybody wants and no one can describe and who knows what they are. So hopefully this will give you a little insight into what we do every day and how it goes around. So a little more about ACS.
So ACS, like I said, started business in 1987. We were a color business. Our final products were film negatives for the lithographic industry. Our job was to color correct things, understand color, adjust color for printers before they started doing a lot of that in-house. As that continued to go in a direction that brought all those services in-house at the actual commercial printers, we diversified into wide format screen, wide format digital, large format litho to some degree. American Color Scans prints on thousands of materials, wood, metal, plastic. So we've printed on steel, some fabrics, cloth. But, as it pertains to the pinball industry, PETG is common, glass is common, adhesive back materials, pressure-sensitive materials for the pinball industry.
This is my favorite hallway, by the way.
Yeah, it's growing. This is my little wall of fame or my hallway of fame. We don't have them all mounted. We try to keep up with it, but as we continue to reproduce a back glass, it gets mounted in rows down these hallways. That's about an 80-foot long hallway. We're all the way down one side, and we're now, this picture is a little older, we're halfway down the other side with titles, and we hope to continue to do that, to bring more products through retailers like Planetary and Che and Marco and companies like that.
So to help with that, we started Outside Edge, which is consumer-facing. It's all the stuff that ACS does behind the scenes. So this one's a little more public. And if you were here last year, you may recognize some of the products that we had last year. We sold out. We sold some of our broken ones even. So we felt that that was a success. So we're back here again this year, and we've got some more products. But you'll have to come to the booth to see those. So can you make me a new back glass? How many times do we hear that?
Rob asked me 3 or 4 times a year, can you make me a new back glass? And he wants to know how much it costs. Well, first of all, first thing I ask is, what's the brand? Because if it's Genco or if it's Game Plan, well, we're in business, but if it's Williams, Gottlieb, Bally, some of the people, Stern included, the answer is typically no, because I need permission from the people who own the artwork before I will do anything.
Yeah, so the first issue is, do you have the rights? Second, is it worth what it'll cost to do?
Yeah, to remanufacture a back glass, depending on what it is. If it was screen printed, a lot of those projects are anywhere between 10 and 11 up to maybe 16 color spot. To reproduce the artwork correctly, so you have what you're probably looking for, which is an exact reproduction done correctly, we're probably going to have between 25 and 60 hours in revectoring the art, getting the art ready, unless someone has already done that. It's going to take somebody that's good with the Adobe products, Adobe software, somebody that understands the graphic industry. There's a little thing called trap, where colors are actually spread out a tiny amount, so when the press registers, there's no gap in the inks, if that makes sense. So all of that needs added or re-added if you're vectoring. So long story short, you're looking at a graphics professional that's probably making between $35 and $85 an hour, spending 25, 30, up to 60 hours to even get it ready to go to print.
So we'll go through that process in a little more detail in a second here. So the process that we do follow, it's 4 steps. First, you got to get permission. Second, you got to assess the original art, see what it was. We'll go through all these in detail.
Real quick, yeah. I've been given art that folks, there's plenty of people out there and an increasing number of folks that have got some experience with the Adobe products or in the graphics industry and have given me files that are great, that save us hours and hours and therefore thousands and thousands of dollars to get ready to reproduce a back glass. Other times we're given an old glass with half the art missing. Like literally, I can see through the glass and saying, can you make me a new one? Until I can get the art in that area. Sometimes I've had up to four glasses of an old title that, for whatever reason, that particular title that failed really, really badly, and scanned different areas and pieced it back together. Those are very, very time consuming. Literally, a lot. It's quite common to be given, you know, here's a plastics job, which, you know, it was a whole set for an old, I believe, a Gottlieb game. It could have been, I think it was Gottlieb. And there's a lot of things going on with this. The holes are probably not even going to line up if I make mine like this one, because this one's probably shrunk over the years, and it's not going to fit anymore. If it does fit, it's really tight. You're going to have to drill them yourself. Well, these guys don't know what they're doing. The holes are on the wrong place. Well, this is what we start with. So we've learned the hard way to not trust this. We'll make prototypes and things like that and find this machine, or ask the customer to go find this machine to make sure they line up and, you know, put markups on it, send it back to us, which all is time-consuming to do correctly.
So the last bit is actually that printing aspect. So there's four parts of this. This is the process. We'll go through each one of those in detail. So starting with permission. That's the first step. It's always the first step.
Yeah. There's, you know, I don't get online very often. My travels and work schedule, I don't look on Pinside and things like that, but I've heard a lot of complaining and read a lot of complaining over the years about, won't let you do this, they won't let you do that, and so on and so forth. But I'm going to speak as a collector, not because I get to do some of the printing. I think it's good that there's a custodian of the artwork. If everyone is out there running their own version of Captain Fantastic and everyone does it 14 times, and after the 16th time maybe we go back and compare it to one of the originals, it's probably not going to look the same. The reds are probably going to be off. Probably somebody's going to be a little smaller than they used to be, some character. I think it's good in the interest of the preservation of the hobby and of the industry that the Captain Fantastic that we produce, or CPR reproduces, or some other company, is an exact reproduction as possible of the original. That's what most collectors want. Discriminating collectors really, really, really want what the original was. And if it's just an open forum and everyone's allowed to do their own thing, I'm not sure how that's ever going to be preserved. So in that respect, I'm glad there's a Shea out there. I'm glad there's a Ron Webb. I'm glad there's a Rick. I'm really thankful, actually, because they're trying to control it and keep it together for the many, many years to come.
Yeah, so getting those rights can be tricky, because we're always asked about, okay, do you have Adam's Family stuff? Well, we don't, because there's other rights that go along with that. Star Trek, you know, another classic example. Music industry, you know, very popular title. I wouldn't want to mess with these guys. You know what happened to Napster?
So what I've been told about these properties, basically, third party, the manufacturing company got permission to do a game years ago, possibly, especially some of these older ones, and there was no provisions in there that I know of, and anyone, if they're in the room, correct me. There's 20 years later to reproduce parts, they would have to go back to that company that owns the rights and owns the $6 million man logo and the entity itself, and they have to get permission.
Yeah, they usually get 5 years.
5 years.
You do parts up until that.
Yeah, which in many cases that's expired. And what I've been told by my customers, which are mainly the people that own the artwork, are saying, you got to go to them, you got to go through all the red tape, you got to go through attorneys, and they want a piece of the action, and they're going to find out they're going to make, in the next 2 years, $10,000 maybe, or $5,000. They're not after that kind of money. They're not going to return your calls. It's too much too often. That's part of the issue from what I've been told.
So I included this one because this one kind of caught us off guard, because we had what we thought permission from Williams to do this. But did anyone know that Frankenstein is universal?
So
I thought Frankenstein was universal.
So everything I do in respect to Outside Edge, with any of this artwork, I have to do prototypes. I don't just send them to Planetary. I have to send them to Williams. And they go, whoa, 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 when I sent this one out. You cannot do this. So they're very, very, okay. Very tight with it.
So that was part one of four, the permissions. So second one, we're going to assess that original art. So what did we get? What's it look like? So what's the supplied art, basically? So it's kind of like this. Here's a cake. It was awesome. Now make another one exactly like it.
And by the way, we use different ingredients that aren't available anymore 10 years ago.
And I don't have a recipe. But I tell you, this is amazing, and I need another one of them. So this is kind of what happens. Once this artwork is printed, it's basically baked. It's done. And to separate it back out and figure out those parts can be a real challenge. We heard a story, was it last year or two? Roger?
Probably a couple years ago. Yeah,
a couple years ago. Yeah, Roger was saying that. So they had found, it was a warehouse, all kinds of art in there. And they managed to save all the glasses, and we're very proud of that. And there is something to be really proud of there. And they ditched all the film because they got all the glasses. This is what we needed. But with all that film, there was the potential to make lots more glasses. But when you just have the glass, you have to try to figure out how it was made again.
And truthfully, the having the film positives or film negatives in some instances is fantastic to be able to start a project to reproduce a part. But we've also found the materials they use were not archival type materials, which most of the time it's not. We're going to burn a screen from it, or we're going to burn a plate from it. Probably going to roll it up for a year or two and keep it on file. And what happens is they shrink, and they all shrink at different rates. They've got creased, they got marks on them. Some of it was made in what's called ruby lith, which that's a thin little red film, and it falls off after a number of years. The artwork is just almost not usable. While there is, it's almost like being given a map with most of the roads missing, but there's a few there, so it's a help. But that's about it.
So along those lines, what condition is it in? All right, I guess that one comes in later. So that's scratches, completely missing pieces, like in her head, which all have to be replaced. And sometimes you can find the original, or like Bruce had said, find another glass that has that image, and you can find that little piece and kind of snipe the art from there. But fortunately, this one's perfect.
Yeah, here we go. Here's one I just recently remanufactured in Stemoman. I found through a lot of people's help, one of them being Trent Augenstein, there's three versions. So this is something I've ran into actually with a lot of the older Gottlieb stuff. I've done a back glass for one of the old wedge heads and sent it out. I think it was actually for Ron Webb. And he sent it back to us, or he didn't send it back. He called me and said, I'm going to send these all back. You made the person, the lady's hair brown, not blonde, and my customer's saying it's blonde. Guess what? They're both out there. They're both actually correct. They didn't care. Only we do. Back then, they didn't care that somewhat. They probably broke a screen. I mean, in the printing industry, or they ran out of ink. And they've got 400 more to print. They called up Gottlieb and said, hey, we've got you mind if we put yellow in there? We change her hair to blonde and everything on this screen to yellow. They'll go, yeah, as long as you can deliver on time. And that's very realistic about what happened. So now those glasses are all out there, and some collectors are calling back saying, we're not paying $300 for this glass. It's completely wrong. It's not wrong. It's one of the versions. And there's actually three versions of Demo Man, and we've already run into it here in the last 3 months. My version is not wrong. It's correct, and it's different from some of the other two versions that are out there. So
there's also the imperfections in the original run. So things that you might see, maybe we can adjust some art on the top or make it fit a little better. So you run into, do you want to reproduce it exactly as it is, and now you've got your authenticity, or do you want to make it look a little better? Yeah. Who knows? You've had requests for both.
Yeah, I've got depends on the situation. I always clear it with my client. Do we retain the error or the misregistration or the bad cuts, or do we fix them? As long as they still fit, they'll look better, but they're going to look, more importantly, different. And then that's potentially more phone calls, more emails about this or that that's wrong. And it's really a lot harder. If I was making the Demo Man plastic set for the very first time, I could make it any color orange or any very small variation of, we've all seen these chips that even be out of paint that's, you know, you have to line them up beside each other to see the difference. But if we hold them separate from each other, we'd say, well, it looks the same to me. But when you make it a slightly different orange and it's correct to mine and lay it beside the other one, it's different. It's hard to follow.
All right. So one of the other things in the assessment is, how was it originally printed? So here we've got some art. It's actually up on the stand there. So this would have been screen printed with spot color. So what is that? It's basically paint by numbers. Each color is a separate color, and they really don't mix together. But which colors?
So see all those lines? An artist on a desktop traced either through some little tools that actually streamline it a little bit, or otherwise used their pointer and traced every single element and made sure that element followed the same elements of the same color for every screen times 14 or 16 times.
And if you can see that image, it's the little corner over there on that glass. That's that little square right there. So there's an awful lot going on these. So then trying to decide which color inks. Well, Bruce found something recently, which is, I think, a very cool find. It's the overlay for Space Shuttle for the printing. And if you look down in the lower right-hand corner, that's where the color specs have been called out. So now,
as long as they didn't change them after that.
True. But at least it gives you a starting point. So those are what we know as industry standard specifications for printing ink. And it just makes it so much easier to start, especially if something's faded, because now you're not matching the faded one, you're matching the original one.
Yep. That's a treasure trove of information right there, as long as it's accurate. The older titles specifically, the EMs, none of that is ever available.
So along with assessment, you're looking at, are there any special inks? You've got a really, well, that's in the printing side on the metallic, but so that's a special thing. It's not everyone can do metallic mirror.
There is a little bit of a difference in how we're mirroring now. We're actually using an ink, and some of the collectors I've noticed online are realizing that. I actually looked through PinSight and found some folks talking about it, and some of them were speaking very accurately. They're not acid etched. They're not mirrors where they washed away some of the mirroring from the back and then printed on it, which is the more authentic way to do it. I wouldn't want to see the price on order of 150 or 200 back glasses being done that way today, even if the EPA allows that, which I don't know. I don't know enough about the mirroring industry, but I do know that our inks are a very, very, very close second, especially if they're done well, which is expensive and difficult. My cost on a gallon of that is a little over $600.
Did you bring your Captain Fantastic glass? The show?
No, I was
thinking. Okay, all right. Yep. Okay, so, and the last possibility is continuous tone, an image, a photograph, and you can't really do that with spot colors because all of the colors blend in together. You know, you couldn't just pick one little area and print one color there and one color there because there's millions of different variations of tone in there. And that's what most of them look like nowadays. But all righty. So that's two down. Next one, build the new art file. So now we figured out what it was and where we start from there. So now we have to go forward. So what's the new printing process? That starts with the part type.
The part type, yeah. One real quick, I'll mention something that's real common. It might be of value to everyone here. With the digital technology that most of us are aware of now that exists, there's printing presses out there that are digital printing presses that will replicate a lot, but not all spot colors. The image quality, I won't go into all the parameters that make up the image quality, but they've all gotten so good that it's possible to do some of these things that were screen printed digitally. But the misnomer, in my opinion, is, well, can't you just do this real quick digitally? Well, real quick digitally, inexpensively, no. The presses on the bottom side of the scale that are capable of reproducing something like this one, at least the color portion of it. Bottom of the barrel is about $100,000 printing press. More than likely, it's a $500,000 to $700,000 printing press, plus the guys that run it. So we have to charge, and guys like me have to charge for the amount of time it takes on a very expensive machine to get color to match an old spot color that was printed 40 years ago. Long story short, it takes a while, and a lot of times even a single color or a single back glass being reproduced, as long as we can achieve those colors digitally, $500, $600, $700 for one back glass, and a lot of times that's not not in the cards really for one game, because you're starting to rival the value of the game, and I'm a collector too, I get that, but yeah, fast, good, and cheap, because digital, quote-unquote digital presses can whip this out, and that's not the case if you want a really good reproduction.
So then how many copies, which again I think you just kind of addressed right there fairly well.
Yeah, and if we screen print, a lot of times it really, for the retailers that have some skin in the game, more skin in the game than most folks realize, they have to pay me within 30 days, and they're going to sit on these glasses for a couple years before they're all gone, typically. You know, 100 to 200 glasses is about where it starts to make sense to go back and really use the authentic process to do this. I think I ran 175 of those recently. That was an expensive back glass to reproduce because of the mirroring. There's a lot of it, too. We throw a lot of them away. There's a high waste factor. But, yeah, digitally, we would not be able to do that clearly because of the mirror. There's only a few processes available to get the mirroring on it, and then... yeah, it's just not cost effective.
So then again, how much time is it going to take to prep the art? Is it really super detailed and complicated like the World's Fair, or is it, you know, what kind of files do you have? And does it need to be the same process as the original? So if you're reproducing an old Gottlieb, you need to have the screen printing, because unless you have a super expensive press, it's not going to work. It won't fool anyone, really. So we also touched on, are there any special inks required, like metallics? And sometimes things like bright oranges, greens, and purples, secondary colors, they have to be mixed from the primaries, and so they lose some of that saturation. So I think when you're printing for some of your retail customers, you have to use certain inks.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of the bright colors near neon or outside of the color gamut of the cyan, magenta, yellow, black, some of you are familiar with that. If they're outside of that, digital is probably not going to be a candidate. You'll assimilate the color, but it's not going to be an exact reproduction at all.
So this is a little more into how it looks when we're actually building the files to do a spot color or CMYK. So this is a little comparison. So on the left-hand side, that's going to be spot color. And in the center is going to be CMYK, and you can see the color bars at the top that I added in there. So you can see the cyan, which looks blue, the magenta, which is pink, the yellow, and the black. It's four colors. It's able to produce a full range of colors, but there's a little texture that goes with it. There's some limitations. And then on the right-hand side is a lot of digital printers will look like this. It'll have a little sandy texture, it kind of looks like. So you can usually tell on a lower end, especially digital printer, because that's what the texture will look like.
They
were expensive, but they were old. Yeah, so, and on the left-hand side, when we're talking about the spot color, if you look at the colors at the top, you've got light green, dark green, black, that kind of light blue, skin color, a red. So just in that tiny little face, there's already six. And so it requires, I don't know, even know how many were on that World's Fair.
It's real common to be 13, 14 in that range.
Yeah, so it's just different processes will give you different results. None of them are right or wrong. But we looked at that already. Okay, so spot colored. This is how it actually kind of goes together.
We print the black first. We print the ink on the backside of glass. So we actually run the printing process backwards of what someone would be doing on paper, like a brochure that you would receive. We start backwards. Black's usually the last color. So since we're printing on the backside of glass, we start with the last color and then go to the first color backwards.
So as we mentioned before, it's basically paint by numbers. So there's the blues, and then we add in the reds, and then there's the greens starting to take shape, then there's the black, and et cetera, et cetera, on and on until you've got all of the colors and it looks like an actual image. Yeah.
When you're doing your current technology, doing the spot, is it still like the old 40s and 50s where you have a separate screen for each spot color?
Yeah,
separate screen for every spot color. Yeah. To run a project like this, if I only have one line running pinball, I typically neck that down to solve problems with manufacturing to also one operator. I'll be on press with this for 30 to 40 hours. It takes a long time.
Is there such a thing as mixing spot for the ones outside the gamut with mixes for process for the rest?
Sometimes. I haven't gotten into that, but what that does bring up another point, that in these things, these guys did not help me or help CPR or anyone else out there that has to do this. We've ran into instances where they'll achieve a color by laying a thin layer of one spot color and then backing it with another spot color, so when the light hits it, it's a third color. So we're using different inks now, and it's very difficult to replicate that. That's usually a trial and error. We get it, but it takes a while because the inks we're using and the inks they used originally are different. We're UV cured for the most part now. Back then they were all solvent-based inks. The inks and the chemicals that were in those inks are no longer available, just like a lot of things aren't that are chemical related.
So that's the spot color side. So now we're going to switch to the CMYK. Same image, except you've got black, which is the K.
These were obviously not printed this way, but this is a great representation of how the modern CMYK process and how all the modern printing occurs. There's very little solid spot color cartoon type art done anymore, obviously, as we've all seen. It's all what we refer to as continuous tone process.
So this is the black plus the cyan, or the black and the blue. And then you have the black, the blue, and the magenta. And then you add in the yellow. And you notice at that last stage there, all of a sudden it goes from looking a little weird to ta-da. And I could do them in any order, and they always would look weird until you put the last one in.
But you notice there's a pattern in that, and there always will be. That pattern right there is called the rosette. It's a pattern that's completely not existent in the old spot color type printing. They're solid inks. I mix a special pink that's going to be right here, a special green, and there's no screen value and no dot pattern in it at all.
And so even though I'm seeing green, dark green, light green, reds, blues, purples, yellows, browns, all that sort of stuff, when you zoom in on it and really zoom in on it, what you see is there's yellow dots, there's magenta dots, there's cyan dots, and there's black dots. If you see any green, it's because there's some blue and some yellow mixing together. If there's any purple, it's some pink and some blue mixed together. So we've decided how we're going to print this, whatever technique that's going to be. So now I got to get to building the art. So you scan the original. It's got to be high-res stuff. There's scanners now that are, you know, limited in size, so even getting some of these bigger pieces into the...
Yeah, the scanners that are flatbed scanners that are capable of the resolution we desire are far and few between.
Yeah, okay. So then you go in and you got to fix it. So now you've got your scan of your original, which might be a great scan, but it might not have been great art. So you go in and you fix. So here's an example of, if you look at her head where she's missing that whole bit, and then it's all been, you know, recreated and fixed. So another aspect of this is adding the masking now, because that's not actually part of the artwork in the traditional sense, but it's part of the printing to allow, you know, areas to be masked and that. All right, so what do we have here? The last bit. So time to get to printing.
So on anything that's mirrored, the first thing we do is put the mirroring on. This is where a lot of scrap occurs, because there has to be a lot of material put down to get a good smooth mirror finish on the front side. As soon as we're done with that, we'll start with the colors. Obviously, like I said, black, and then we start adding colors one at a time. Usually, I, again, relegate any backlash specifically project to one pressman on one press. There might be a couple presses running, but we don't switch Alien Poker halfway through to a different printing press for a different operator.
So it's a long, slow
yes.
process.
Yeah.
All right, so when you're on press, you sometimes need to make adjustments to make sure. There's something called out of register, which means that all of those different colors, those C, M, Y, and K, are not quite lined up correctly. And what it looks like is you can see kind of a shadow on some of these. Like if you see the purple shirt that she's wearing, there's like a shadow off to the left-hand side. And throughout this thing, there's little shadows around, and that's what happens when it's out of register. It looks fuzzy, it looks soft. Or there could be color shifts. So that if you notice the policeman's shadow on his chin, down at the bottom it's orange, down at the top it becomes yellow. You know, you got to find and maintain those controls, otherwise it shifts as you're running down the press. All right, so that's our four bits, and then we'll go through a little wrap-up here. So to recap, those are the process, the four parts. You have to get permission first, take a look and see what you have, figure out how you're going to make a new one, and then actually get it printed. So why bother? You know, we could just bang these out, right? I think it maximizes the experience for everyone. And I think you need to have reproduction experts in order to preserve the past, which Bruce had already talked on, and also to innovate for the future, because we're using the same techniques and just tweaking them a little bit here and there, applying them to different substrates.
Yeah, when we have preserved artwork that's accurate, isn't it cool to maybe think about moving on now to do lenticular versions and do other things out there that we've already started to see that are really neat? There's other things going on, too, that we're working on that will probably be a while. But, yeah, I want the most accurate version of the original artwork there is as a collector and as a graphics person.
So as far as maximizing that experience for everybody, you know, for the artist, they get to use special techniques, all their details preserved, their visual style and their intent is actually seen through. As a designer myself, the worst thing is when you get something printed and you get it back and you think, that wasn't quite what I had envisioned. I picked the wrong red or whatever it happens to be. From a manufacturing perspective, of course they want to have beautiful games. High quality, consistency, all of these things are great to be known for, but there's also a cost aspect to it. What's cost efficient? What makes the most sense? And then from the player's perspective, well, there it is without the art. I don't know if we'd all be sitting here if that's what all the pinball machines look like. You know, that's even a simple one. But here's another one. You know, it's got some stuff going on, but when you actually add that art, it's a whole different experience. And that's actually what was intended. We want you to have the whole package, and anything that takes away from that, if you see something chipped or if it's weird or it just doesn't have the quite, you know, the art isn't great, it does affect it, I think. From a collector's standpoint, you know, you want to maintain your value, you want to have these things last a long time, be authentic and not, oh, this is the wrong color. I bought this game and it's not right. And from the restorer's standpoint, it's kind of better than digging through a bowl sometimes trying to find the right part that's okay.
That being said, I'll leave the title out. I'll leave the customer out. I'll leave everything out, the details. I've already gotten into a project here in the last 12 months where I was sent an original to reproduce of a very popular title. And I started going to town on it. And because we've learned the hard way, we always look for a secondary example of the game. We look online, we look at the database, we start comparing visually. Right away, after we researched, the individual said this was new old stock, this was one that a guy had, and it was not. It was definitely not. I know what UV screen printing looks like, and I know they were solvent printed. This was UV printed. It's wrong. The colors are wrong. Everything was wrong, and it's floating around out there in the market. That's why there needs to be custodians of the artwork.
So I think that Pinball has an incredible legacy of some very talented artists, and I just pulled together a few of these just because we've been talking about, this isn't pieces that don't have art on them. That's all we're talking about, is the parts of the pinball machine that actually have art. And it's such a diverse set of work. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I don't think we would all be sitting here if we all didn't appreciate this and enjoy it at some level. You know, there's just so many different styles, and, you know, I just think it's actually amazing how each one of these is completely unique, and it's all made by somebody. You know, there's artists behind all of this, and I think that's pretty cool, and we have a responsibility to, you know, preserve that.
Yep.
So I think there's some great people who are doing that. I mean, by having this show, you know, I think that's huge. It keeps everything alive and keeps everybody interested. In
particular, going. You know, Scott talked a lot about this whole four-color process thing and spot color thing. In particular, the very, very, very most difficult back glasses to do, I don't know what it was, 1978-ish, through the mid to late 80s, they were still running true back glasses with process printing on them. They're very difficult. I know there's some out there that I, as a collector, wish were better. I'm working on it, too. I've learned the hard way without releasing anything how hard it is, and we have failed, but we're working on it. And I think we have some things going that will probably have the capability of reproducing the process back glasses, true back glasses, in a more accurate way. It's tough. I won't pass that on anyone, regardless of who tries it. It's very difficult. We've been working with one for 4 months in our spare time. We think we have a process down that will allow us to offer those glasses in an exact reproduction way. So,
yeah, so any questions for the group? Yeah.
Just maybe a general question about all this great work goes into making all the code accurate, and then suddenly we have the lighting technology behind them changing. What are your thoughts on
I just had one of those, and I think it was an LED scenario for blackout. I ran blackout twice. Everyone loves that glass. I love the artwork on it. I was proud of the project itself. It came out nicely. Ran them again. We have densitometers. We have light boosts. We make sure the density of the ink is the same. I had one of them their first run. It matches the second run. And I had a collector complained that it looked washed out and sent me photos, and I would agree. And it looked like they had LEDs in there. I don't have anything scientific or accurate to say that we're going to bring the intensity up 20% or something like that, because then anyone running incandescents are going to say this thing doesn't light up at all. And I don't know. We can't make versions. Versions would, whew, dude, now you're talking about $600 back glasses. Because of the amount of material and labor it takes. So, yeah.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Which is the hardest company, Williams, Bally, Diamond?
Probably some of the Williams titles, some of the process stuff that we've been playing around with here recently. Most difficult I've run into are the process glass. That's difficult. In some instances, the film exists, and it's not real usable. So we're still working out. So I would consider the process glasses, what are some of them? 8-Ball Deluxe, the Space Shuttle.
Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon Spot.
Yeah. Anything with an illustration or a photograph of someone, again, like we showed with Medieval Madness, it's that continuous tone.
It saved them money. I mean, bottom line is they were running these things 16 color, and as time went on, all companies, and I'm sure we all work in places that are looking to save money, you switch it to a CMYK process. You've taken it from 16, 15, 14 times through the press down to 4 to create an image. That's what everybody did. And it was getting better, frankly.
First of all, thank you for coming today. You did a great job at everything you do.
Thank you.
Question for you. A lot of us have goggle glasses right where the score rails are.
Yep.
A little pinhole, you know, where you're rubbed against the metal behind it.
Yes.
We send that to you. Can you wide open?
Not affordably. I can. It depends on what you consider. I mean, I would have to get the shape. I would have to either cut ruby or run a piece of film, burn it to a screen, expose a screen, wash it out, block it out, load it into a press, register on some scrap material, get it perfect, put the live glass in there, run it, see what I'm talking about to make it really right.
And I think that's why the restorers have a job as well.
Yeah.
It's a different way of going about it, you know, right? A little brush and
yeah,
try to do it.
Yeah, Phoebe, I don't know if she's here, but I've seen some of her work. She's amazing at what she does.
Out of all the projects that you guys have done, which one would you consider your biggest success as far as getting closest to the original?
It would probably Sorcerer. I think about a year and a half ago, I did Sorcerer, and I was very proud of that. There was a small difference in the purple, and we couldn't get there. But other than that, we weren't given any artwork. We were given a glass, and everybody's probably familiar with that title. It's a pretty complicated title, and we took our time with it, and I was really proud with how that came out. Blackout I liked. The old Gottlieb stuff, they're all difficult because there's just so much going on and so much little detail in there. And it was all hand-drawn, originally. So those are all difficult. But as far as the overall project when I was done, probably Sorcerer. Anything else?
All right, well, you can come by. And, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Look, great presentation. I was also impressed with the young lady in that pink video at the beginning.
Yes, it is a comedian group. I can get you that information.
Yeah. Scott,
I'm glad
and
you
I,
enjoyed that.
Scott and I both work a lot. Our wheelhouse is retail graphics, you know, things like you see hanging from the ceiling at Lowe's or Home Depot or in retail fashion. Scott works with a fashion company. And that's real. That's real world. That's the type of things that happen in those companies. And being on the printing side of it, I've had very, very similar scenarios.
Well, so come by, see us at the booth. This is a rough mock-up. The booth looks better. But anyway, we appreciate you listening to us, and hopefully this is giving you a little more insight into what we're doing.
Thank you.